This is a Rabble Podcast Network show.
New voices in your head.
It's Radio Free Radio.
Thanks for tuning in to 93.3 CFMU Radio. This is Progressive Voices. I'm Riaz Sayani-Mulji. Today I'm joined in studio by Robert Allison. Robert is one of the founding members of the Toronto Palestine Film Festival. He's been involved with Queers Against Israeli Apartheid, the Canadian Boat to Gaza, and sits on the National Steering Committee for Independent Jewish Voices. Robert, thanks so much for joining me in studio today.
Well, thanks, Riaz. It's good to be here.
All right, today we're talking about Operation Pillar of Cloud, the latest Israeli assault on the Gaza Strip. Robert, to start off, could you speak to Operation Pillar of Cloud?
It's just been going on for the last week. The Israelis dropped 1,350 bombs on Gaza, killed as of the 19th, 95 Gazans. And at the same time, three Israelis died from rocket fire out of Gaza. And it seems to be just, it's a continuation of an ongoing Israeli dislike of the people of Gaza, I would have to say.
And today, ceasefire announced. So for the moment, a lull, it would seem, in hostilities.
We got a lull in hostilities, but we can only pray that it's going to last, because there's certainly no way that the Gazans can hold up against the might of the Israeli military. I mean, just the sheer brutality of the Israeli military.
So before we go into talking specifically about Israel-Palestine, the state of the Gaza Strip and the Gazans, Robert, could you give us a brief background of Independent Jewish Voices Canada, maybe a bit of its history, the principles underlying the organization, its mandate, and why you became involved with it?
Yeah, the Independent Jewish Voices was came about in 2006, the United Church of Canada, in reaction to another one of Israel's assaults on Gaza and then later on Lebanon, brought a motion to its General Council to divest from companies contributing to the Israeli occupation. And word of this motion got the Israeli lobby highly mobilized, and they did a frontal full attack on the United Church. Eventually, the attack included claims of the United Church being anti-Semitic, which is a favorite. This alarmed some members of the United Church who happened to be Jews, and they, along with other people, started to work with the members of the United Church and show them that there was an alternative Jewish voice, namely that not all Jews supported the actions of the State of Israel, that there were some progressive voices. There was an education thing that happened, and leading up to the vote on the motion, the Israeli lobby lobbied hard. The Jewish activists got in there and educated, and enough people of the United Church got the message from the Jewish voices that they ended up passing the motion. So that was all very disturbing to the progressive Jews that there was a need for another voice, an alternative voice to the Israeli lobby. So in March 2008, they had a national convention. 18 progressive Jewish organizations attended. Out of that convention came a statement of unity. It was adopted, and they're generally confirmed the right of Palestinians and Israelis, the human rights of all humans. They confirmed the need to talk out against war, a number of human rights-based stands. They also discovered that being a national Jewish organization allowed them to do other things, and primarily about these were to, aside from speaking out against what the State of Israel was doing, they started to do national tours, which generally involved other Jews with progressive voices, Mark Ellis, Jeff Halper. They supported My Name is Rachel Corrie, Seven Jewish Children, and so as these events would be attacked, the IJV would come and say, here, we're Jews, and we don't think what you're doing is wrong, and we want to discuss what Israel's doing, and we want to talk about it a lot, and we want to educate, and we want it to stop. We want these people to be able to live in peace, and we want an end to the occupation.
All right, Robert, so could you speak a bit to why, not just in terms of Operation Pillar of Cloud, but more broadly how Israel treats its Palestinian, whether it be citizens of Israel or in the occupied territories or in the Gaza Strip, why independent Jewish voices and yourself and your colleagues are opposed to how the State of Israel is behaving?
Well, Jews have always been proud of their progressive voice, their human rights record. The whole idea that what happened to them will not happen again, we advocate not only will it not happen again, it will not happen to anyone. So this idea for instance, with the Gazans of blockading them in, of dropping bombs on them periodically, targeted assassinations, of controlling the supply of goods in and out of the Gaza Strip, of the general imprisonment that the Gazans are in, it's just not humane, and it's certainly not what a lot of us in IJV would consider part of our Judaism.
You brought up one important point that I want to revisit. To independent Jewish voices, steadfast, unconditional support of Israel and what Israel is doing to the Palestinians is not part of your Judaism. To what extent has Judaism been intertwined with Zionism?
Well, you go to a faith-based service, and and it depends which shul you're in, but you go to worship God, and you have various aspects of the state creeping in. Just after this current operation, I was told of a service that was held, and in the middle of the service, or at some point in the service, the attendees of the service were asked to sing the national anthem of Israel. And I think, well, this is everything that I've been taught and brought up to keeps the state and church separated. And it's very, if I want to go and practice my Judaism and worship, it's very difficult for me to go into an environment to worship and then have to start worshiping the State of Israel. So the intermeshing the faith and the state, it causes real problems for people who want to focus on their Judaism and their faith beliefs. And I can't see going into a shul and worshiping some entity that is actually murdering people. That just goes back against all of my understandings of what God has asked of us.
Yeah, so it must be pretty difficult then in terms of dialogue between Jews.
Well, you find some people who I had a colleague recently say to me that he really wished there was somewhere he could go and talk about Israel without being ostracized. And then I said to him, well, come and meet a group I'm involved in. You can talk about it, and you can have varying degrees of opinion as long as you conform to the basis of unity. But so we have a bit of a spectrum of people that are actually within independent Jewish voices, and the door is open, and we do have new people coming because they're not finding their home inside of the established Jewish order, if you like, inside of Canada. I often hear people say that it is easier to discuss Israel in Israel than it is in North America.
How do you see media coverage in general for the Israeli-Palestinian conflict?
The media coverage is today has been absolutely horrendous. Tends to be one-sided and tends to dehumanize the Palestinians. So I was reading an article. Mitch Potter had been sent to Israel to cover this. And the first article he wrote, I believe it was in last Sunday's paper, talked to a resident of the south in Israel. The interview or the article was about the fear that was in this person, and it went on to discuss that his car had been damaged. And not so far away, people were dying. But Mitch Potter, he's the Washington bureau chief, found it worth writing about a damaged car and a bit of fear in someone while the aerial assault and the assault from the sea was hammering away at Gaza. So it's just mind-boggling. And then I saw an interview or a headline, John Baird today was condemning the media for being making Israel look like an aggressor. It's kind of hard not to see Israel as the aggressor given their military might and that their target was all captive. So it's also hard not to see someone as an aggressor when the numbers start coming out. You know, I think as of today, 140 Palestinians dead. Tells me someone's being a bit more aggressive than the other person. When you get 140 to 5, I think that's the number. The numbers really don't tell the whole story, but you get 140 to 5. Well, someone's being a lot more aggressive. And not to mention that Israel just simply has this incredible capability, military might. I just flipped through a couple of articles, and there's one in the Jerusalem Post. There are actually two that really concern me. One in the Jerusalem Post. Oh, heck, they're both from the Jerusalem Post. Just to the dehumanization of the Palestinians, the headline that actually got copy in the Jerusalem Post, "Sirens Causing Some Pets to Suffer from Anxiety." The situation in the south has been very difficult, not only for us humans, but also for our pets, dog owner tells Post. And someone felt that this was worthy of printing. I have a cat. If my cat had bombs going off around it, well, too bad for my cat. I'd be more concerned about the humans that were being struck, killed. And then the Jerusalem Post again. Allowed Gilad Sharon, Ariel Sharon's son, to write an article, and just to give people an idea of the viciousness, he writes, "A strong opening isn't enough. You also have to know how to finish, and finish decisively. If it isn't clear whether the ball crossed the goal line or not, the goal isn't decisive. The ball needs to hit the net, visible to all. What does a decisive victory sound like? Tarzan-like cry. Let the entire jungle know in no uncertain terms who won and just who was defeated." It goes on, and says, "The residents of Gaza are not innocent. They elected Hamas." Which, of course, brings up another problem. They had a democratic election that was seen as fair by all the observers. The big problem was that they didn't vote for the party that the West would have liked. They didn't vote for the party that Israel would like. So now they suffer. But Sharon goes on. He also, most disturbing, is he says, "We need to flatten entire neighborhoods in Gaza, flatten all of Gaza. The Americans didn't stop with Hiroshima. The Japanese weren't surrendering fast enough, so they hit Nagasaki too." One only wonders, is this the leadership or the voice of Israel? And then what's even more disturbing is that our government jumps on board and says, "We unconditionally support Israel." And so Do they support this?
Yeah, it's really troubling what you raised, Gilad Sharon's comments about comparing what Israel ought to do in Gaza to what the Americans did to Japan. There's also an Israeli interior minister who stated that Israel has to enact a Holocaust against the Palestinians. So, Robert, now that we've seen a ceasefire, although whether or not that ceasefire is maintained is up for debate, how do you see any of this, whether it be the siege of the Gaza Strip, the apartheid system in the West Bank, Israeli relations with the rest of the Middle East, how is any of it going to change? And what role do you want to see independent Jewish voices play?
Well, you know, one of the things that we're concerned about as Jews is primarily what's been going on in Israel does not provide safety for Jews around the world. It actually endangers them more. It endangers them more. It becomes a more dangerous place to be a Jew as a result of the actions of the state of Israel. And so I think that Israel really has to figure out how not to continue its role as the bully in the playground. It has to start to negotiate with people. It has to end the occupation. It has to provide equal rights for all citizens. It has to end its apartheid system. Get rid of the Jewish-only roads, and start, you know, it needs to re-examine its sense of humanity, I think you can't stay in this stuck position, and you at the very least have to start having an honest conversation about what's going on, and examining. I've been thinking, you know, like if I was Palestinian or if I lived in the Middle East, in one of the other countries that the West likes to say is not a democracy and should become a democracy and stuff like that, I'm thinking, I'm not sure that I would really like the idea of democracy because I elect a government and the West... The beacons of democracy, they don't like it. So I spend my time trapped in this occupation world, this occupied world. And then on another angle of democracy, every time the country that likes to claim that it's the only true democracy in the Middle East has an election, the election involves dropping bombs on me. So I'm not going to be too fond of the idea of democracy.
All right, Robert, I'd like to thank you so much for coming into the studio and doing this interview with me. And I'd like to thank you for the hard work and efforts you're putting in to fight for justice and freedom for Palestinians.
Well, thank you. Thank you for having me.
This was 93.3 CFME Radio. You were listening to Progressive Voices, and I'll talk to you next week.